And we are back here on this Sunday morning, officially into March. Hard to believe we're already about 3 months into the new year, March the 2nd. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. It is the Hot Seat with your host, Vinny Fredericks. And time is just absolutely flying by this year. Before we know it, March Madness tournament underway, Selection Sunday, just 2 weeks from today on March 16th. Obviously, the NBA getting into the full swing of things, NFL offseason, it's combine week. No shortage of things to talk about, as we always do here on the Hot Seat with your host, Vinny Fredericks, here on 104.5 The Team. Thank you again, everybody, for tuning in. Should be a good one. Should be another good one. We'll dive right into things here, starting with the NFL, as it has been quite some time since we've talked NFL football here on the Hot Seat. But with it being combine week, it only makes sense that we talk a little NFL draft, a little bit of some mocks, if you will. This is Mel Kiper's most recent mock draft. Of course, this was put out before the combine started just a few days ago, but still pretty accurate stuff, I would say. We'll have to see, you know, how things might change down the line. Of course, we've got a couple top talents not participating in the combine this year, one of which the potential number one overall pick, Abdul Carter, the edge rusher from Penn State, who is been kind of getting over a shoulder injury since the college football playoffs in the game that he suffered it against Boise State in the semifinals. So naturally makes sense for Abdul Carter not to work out and risk doing any more damage to the shoulder, get himself drafted wherever he can, and then go from there. There's really no point and obviously, you know, making things any worse. And actually, excuse me, it wasn't the shoulder. I believe it was his foot, actually, that he's been dealing with some injury issues with. But he's been advised not to have surgery. Yeah, it was on his foot. But he was eventually advised by doctors to not bother going with the surgery. Take some rest time, take things into the combine and into his pro day, and then start thinking about performing again and see what happens. And another player, you know, top talent that isn't performing in the combine, that being Shedeur Sanders, which, again, makes sense if you ask me. I mean, if I was Shedeur Sanders, what's the point in even bothering, in doing the combine? You're not going to jump up above Cam Ward. Realistically, if a team already likes Cam Ward better than you, you having a good combine is not going to change that, Shedeur. So why bother going out there and risking falling in the draft and, you know, worsening your draft stock in case you somehow have a bad combine? So when you're already a top three projected pick, or at the very least going in the top 10, there's really no point unless Shedeur is really that confident that he can jump all the way up to number one. But that's not the case, and it makes sense, you know. So let's dive into this Mel Kiper mock draft here. Starting with the Tennessee Titans picking at number one, a pick that I could see going a number of different ways. I wouldn't be surprised if Tennessee opts to trade back. I wouldn't be surprised if Tennessee takes a quarterback here and replaces Will Levis. But Mel Kiper has the Tennessee Titans with the number one pick in the NFL draft this year, taking Mr. Abdul Carter from Penn State. And of course, the quarterback question looms pretty large here. Like I said, could Tennessee trade this pick to a team that needs a quarterback and is looking to land Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders? Or do the Titans opt to draft one of those guys and decide to replace Will Levis after a few disappointing seasons? But of course, there's other ways to attack the quarterback position. I mean, there's free agents out there with the names of Aaron Rodgers, Sam Darnold, potentially. There's always the trade for Kirk Cousins, which is possible. Justin Fields, Russell Wilson. There's some names out there that, I don't necessarily see a Cam Ward or a Shedeur Sanders coming into Tennessee, of all places, and immediately bringing success. I don't think either one of these guys is going to have a Jaden Daniels or a CJ Stroud-esque season to where they get drafted and almost immediately you see the winning impact on the organization. I don't see that with either of these players. So if you're the Tennessee Titans, you might as well just take the best player on the board, and that being Abdul Carter. Makes sense. You get your team a stud edge rusher who, can really take this defense to the next level. And if the defense is that good, maybe your offense can live with being a little mediocre. Maybe you can survive one more year with Will Levis at quarterback if the defense is setting him up in great situations with great field positioning. You never know. But either way, the Titans, I mean, really, who wouldn't? But especially the Titans would love to have Abdul Carter, who, like I said, isn't working out this week at the combine. But the dude just creates so much pressure off the edge and, you know, had 12 sacks in 2024 and led the nation with 23 and a half tackles for loss. So in a season that saw Tennessee in the bottom tier, they were exactly ranked 25th in pressure this season. You slide Abdul Carter next to Jeffrey Simmons and Tavondre Sweat, and all of a sudden you got a pretty solid defensive line here in Tennessee that could really put opposing quarterbacks under duress. So we'll see where Tennessee decides to go with that number one pick. But with Abdul Carter off the board, it would only make sense for the Cleveland Browns at number two to select Cam Ward out of Miami. And again, another pick where I could see a lot of different things happening. I mean, yes, the Browns do kind of need a quarterback. They're still on the hook for Deshaun Watson, but Deshaun Watson's already out next season. Excuse me, after re-injuring that Achilles injury. So, yes, you're still kind of stuck with Deshaun Watson, but if you can at least get a young quarterback in there that can create some QB competition, not that, I mean, Jameis Winston created QB competition last year, so it's not like you need to do much to create a conversation, spark a conversation, I should say, with Cleveland and especially about their quarterback room. But does Cam Ward make the Browns that much better? I don't know. I could see this happening. It would make sense, but do the Browns get that much out of Cam Ward that they wouldn't get out of Travis Hunter? Because at least then you throw another weapon out there that you could use. I mean, whether you play him on defense or offense, the Browns could use him either way. You throw him on opposite side of Denzel Ward, that's a pretty nasty secondary and cornerback duo. You throw him on offense, and naturally you now have that wide receiver one that you were very clearly missing last year. So I guess it would make sense. And you also have, you know, some other pretty talented guys that had, you know, surprising seasons in guys like Elijah Mitchell and, you know, some of their other young wide receivers out there in Cleveland. So I guess it would make sense to see them draft a quarterback, especially when you don't know when Deshaun Watson's going to be back. You don't know what type of player he's going to be when he comes back. So it would definitely make sense for the Browns to go quarterback here. I just don't know if Cam Ward really is the saving grace for this Cleveland Browns team. And if I'm Cam Ward, I wouldn't trust the Cleveland Browns to draft me anyway. After seeing the way that they've handled quarterbacks they've drafted, let's see, names like Baker Mayfield, Johnny Manziel, Deshaun Kizer was a Brown for a little bit. You know, the Browns are, historically speaking, not good at developing QB talent. And we've seen that year in and year out. Could Cam Ward be the difference? I guess maybe. He is a Heisman winner. He is one of the best quarterbacks coming out of college football right now. But I don't know. If I'm the Cleveland Browns, I would almost be considering drafting a guy like Travis Hunter, who you know no matter what is going to be good, and seeing if you can get a quarterback in free agency. See if you can sign a Sam Darnold to a one-year deal until Deshaun Watson comes back, even though I don't see Sam Darnold taking a one-year deal. See if you can sign a Daniel Jones to a one-year deal. Not that these guys are going to move the needle for you and make you a playoff contender, but at the very least, they have reps in the NFL, should make as minimal rookie-esque mistakes as possible. And you know, you can see how Travis Hunter fits with the team. You can try and get a quarterback in the following draft or free agency or that offseason. But yeah, I don't know. I don't see how either one of these top two teams could take a quarterback and have them actually make an impact right away. But we'll see. Mel Kiper with Cam Ward and Abdul Carter off the board has the New York Giants taking Travis Hunter out of Colorado at three, which I think makes sense. But at the same time, the Giants really need a quarterback. And I'd have a little bit more faith in the Giants being able to develop a quarterback than I would the Titans or the Browns. I mean, granted, we saw what happened with Daniel Jones, and he certainly came into the league with much higher expectations. And then by the end of his tenure in New York, ends up getting benched, is playing scout team safety, gets cut his final year of his contract. It was just, it was an ugly show for the New York Giants, especially with Daniel Jones this season. So do the Giants really want to start that whole process over again with a quarterback taken third overall, especially with Matthew Stafford still out there as a possibility for the Giants to go out there and acquire, which I don't know. The Giants, it's very interesting because Joe Shane and Brian Daboll are obviously coaching and making moves for their jobs at this point. If the Giants draft a quarterback at number three and they don't get a Jaden Daniels or a CJ Stroud in the draft, where you don't see that winning change in culture right away, you don't see a quarterback bringing wins in their first year, which should not be expected of a rookie quarterback. I mean, I don't care if you take the guy number one overall. No rookie should be expected to come in and be the saving grace to any team in the NFL. That's not how it works. These guys need to develop and learn. And yes, we've seen Jaden Daniels and CJ Stroud. We've seen them have very successful rookie seasons, win games. And yes, it's possible. But that shouldn't be the assumption that just because you draft a quarterback number three, that he's going to take you to the playoffs and have a rookie of the year season. Look what happened with the Bears and Caleb Williams. You know, it's very possible that you draft a guy and he needs some time to develop. So for the Giants, I mean, if you're Joe Shane and Brian Daboll, yeah, you would rather go trade for a Matthew Stafford who at least has shown that he can be good in this league. He's won a Super Bowl. He's very well established. You know what you're going to get out of Stafford. You know that you'll get 1 or 2 years of Pro Bowl level quarterback play. And hopefully that can bring you back to, you know, back out of this rut that you've been in of mediocrity year in and year out. Maybe it'll save Daboll and Shane's jobs. I don't know, but it's certainly something that the Giants will have to figure out before draft night. Because if you can somehow land Matthew Stafford before draft night and all of a sudden now you're talking about, all right, let's get Travis Hunter, throw him outside with Malik Nabers. Okay. That's a pretty solid offense, but we'll see. We'll see what the Giants end up doing, if they can even land Matthew Stafford, excuse me. But either way, the Giants taking the best player on the board in Travis Hunter would make sense. If they can't make a deal for Matthew Stafford, don't be surprised if they end up taking Shedeur Sanders at number three, because we all know that the Giants have zero quarterbacks on the roster right now under contract, and that is probably the best quarterback room the Giants have had since Eli Manning was in town. So either way, it can only get better for the New York Giants, but we'll see. I really wouldn't be surprised to see Stafford in Big Blue, but that doesn't mean that I think it makes sense. Again, if you're looking for short-term success to keep your job, if you're Brian Daboll and Joe Shane, yeah, it makes sense to go get a guy in Matt Stafford, but realistically, the Giants, I know they're trying to avoid a rebuild from top to bottom, but it might be time. It might be time to just, you know, bust open the books and hit the panic button and just decide, all right, clearly things are not working the way that they've been going. Let's take a step back and completely reevaluate, start top to bottom, cut everything loose and see what we can build out of this brand new football team. But we'll see what the Giants end up doing. Another regional team of interest here in the New England Patriots, drafting at number four. Mel Kiper's got them taking Will Campbell, offensive tackle out of LSU, which is the number four spot. It is a trade back spot if something presents itself. Travis Hunter and Abdul Carter are pretty much guaranteed to be off the board at this point. One of the top two quarterbacks might still be available. So, of course, the Patriots are going to be getting a few calls if this is how things shake up. But they should be very interested given the holes on the roster and a lot of the pieces that they can fill by trading back from this number four pick. But if that isn't the case, then yeah, go offensive line, get someone out there to protect Drake May, or go wide receiver as well. Get Drake May a weapon. Either way, whatever you're doing with this number four pick, if you're the Patriots, you're doing something to help Drake May. Whatever it takes to make his life easier. If it were me, I would say go offensive line, because you give a guy like Drake May extra time in the pocket. It doesn't matter who you have a wide receiver. Someone's going to get open. Drake May is going to make a play happen, whether it be with his legs or his arm. Get yourself that offensive line. You know, the last thing you need is, especially when you just found your new franchise quarterback, last thing you need is him getting beat up too much, end up getting injured, or a number of things can go wrong when your quarterback is constantly under pressure like that. So if I'm the Patriots and I keep that number four pick, yeah, absolutely, you go with an offensive lineman, whoever you think the best on the board is. If that's Will Campbell, great. If that's somebody else like Kelvin Banks Jr. or any of these other offensive linemen, yeah, either way, you go O-line. Rounding out the top five, Mel Kiper's got the Jacksonville Jaguars taking Mason Graham, the defensive tackle out of Michigan, at number five, which makes sense. The Jacksonville Jaguars were one of the worst, not only just one of, they were practically the worst defensive team in all of the NFL this past year. And after hiring the offensive-minded Liam Cohen as their new head coach, it's going to be a long road to improvement for this Jacksonville Jaguars defense. And the first step in doing so is taking the best defensive player you can find with the number five overall pick, because you can't ignore the huge problems on defense anymore. Only the Panthers out of all teams gave up more yards per play than the Jaguars, which was 5.9 yards per play for Jacksonville. And although they have guys like Arik Armstead and Devon Hamilton under contract, they could really use a dominant force in between the tackles, you know, between Trayvon Walker and Josh Hines-Allen. Someone out there, a big body that can really disrupt the run game, can clog up holes, and, you know, especially make an impact on the passing game. And if I'm the Jaguars, yeah, this is exactly where I'm looking. If I'm not going Mason Graham, I'm going Will Howard, I'm going Will Johnson, the corner out of Michigan. One of those guys, whoever the best defensive player you can come up with is, you're taking them at number five. Doesn't really matter what position, doesn't matter what fit. Whoever you can get that will play defense at number five, Jacksonville Jaguars need to take them. Looking at the next couple picks here, Raiders taking Ashton Jeanti out of Boise State at number six, the star running back who naturally would obviously be a good pick. He's going to be a great player. Do the Raiders want to take him all the way as early as number six? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, they do have a big quarterback question mark out there in Vegas. So getting a stud running back that you can really lean on, especially a young one at that, will obviously have a big impact. Me personally, I don't want to see the Raiders do this because I selfishly want the Dallas Cowboys to draft Ashton Jeanti at number 12, but it would make sense for the Raiders to take Ashton Jeanti, who really is probably the best player on the board as far as individual talent at this point in the draft. But we'll see. Still a number of things could change for Vegas. Still a number of free agent quarterbacks out there. Maybe Russell Wilson goes and rejoins his former head coach Pete Carroll in Las Vegas. We'll see. But certainly would be a good pick for the Las Vegas Raiders if they ended up going with Ashton Jeanti at number six. Mel Kiper's got the New York Jets taking a quarterback at number seven, that being Shedeur Sanders out of Colorado, which, again, just like with the Giants, I don't know, man. Look at how the Jets have been as far as developing quarterback talent recently. I mean, Zach Wilson, Sam Darnold, even Aaron Rodgers coming over to the New York Jets, he couldn't find that much success. So do I trust the New York Jets to draft a quarterback in the top 10 and then develop him into an actual good player? Maybe under Aaron Glenn, things would be a little bit different, but still, I don't necessarily trust the Jets to develop a rookie quarterback. That being said, again, it would make sense for the Jets to go Shedeur Sanders. They're moving on from Aaron Rodgers, get younger, start things fresh, maybe open up a new era in New York Jets football with Shedeur Sanders, Garrett Wilson, and Breece Hall on offense. But I don't know. I just it's always a worry for me when I see the New York Jets drafting a quarterback, because you know how this is going to go. You know he's going to struggle, and then who knows, maybe 5 years in, he goes to a new team and completely revitalizes his career and ends up having a career year. Maybe he follows the same exact path as Sam Darnold. We will see, but according to Mel Kiper, New York Jets most likely taking Shedeur Sanders at number 7. Rounding out the top 10, Carolina Panthers taking Jalen Walker, the linebacker out of Georgia, New Orleans Saints, Tyler Warren, the big tight end out of Penn State, and the Chicago Bears at number 10, taking Josh Simmons, the offensive tackle at Ohio State. So we'll see. Excited for the NFL draft. Always a fun time of year seeing who the top picks are, who everybody's favorite teams end up getting for their most highly touted rookies in the draft class. Well, when we come back, we'll dive into all things NBA, get into the basketball a little bit. Stay with us. More of the Hot Seat with Vinny Fredericks coming up next here on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. Vinny Fredericks here from the Hot Seat, letting you know to download the free, that's right, the free 104.5 The Team app on the App Store today to be up to date with when our shows are going on, when the Hot Seat is happening every Sunday morning, and when the rest of our programming updates come out, as you will be able to listen to our shows live from your phone anytime you want. So be sure to go to the App Store, download the free 104.5 The Team app today. And we are back here on the Hot Seat with your host, Vinny Fredericks, here on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio in Albany, in that free 104.5 The Team app, diving into all things NBA basketball here for segments, as we'll take a look at the standings, how the New York Knicks, how your Boston Celtics, Brooklyn Nets, well, we all know how the Brooklyn Nets are doing, but we'll check how your regional teams of interest are doing around the NBA and the standings. Of course, my Miami Heat still not doing too hot. Figuring some things out, certainly looking better with each game as it goes on. But in the post-Jimmy Butler era, certainly still a lot of things to figure out. As for the Golden State Warriors, they've been jumping up in the standings, currently sitting at 7th in the Western Conference, with plenty of things that could change. But yeah, they've been rolling since they traded for Jimmy Butler. As I'm not very surprised. I know what Jimmy Butler can bring to the table. And when he's motivated and actually wants to play basketball, he's certainly a very talented player. So the Golden State Warriors, they're certainly going to be a team that you won't want to mess with come playoff time. Certainly a team that you would hope to avoid. I mean, Steph Curry, Jimmy Butler, that's a dangerous duo when they're both on one, as we just saw Steph was on one the other night against, who was it against? Against the Orlando Magic Thursday night. Oh my goodness. 56 points, 16 of 25 from the field. I mean, that's insane. 12 for 19 from deep. The man shot 16 of 25 total. 12 of those 16 were three-pointers. And he only shot, let's see, he shot 4 for 6 on non-3-point attempts. 4 for 6. Just absolutely ridiculous efficiency from Steph Curry. And this is why even at 36 years old, the dude is still one of the best players in the league. He still finds ways to get the job done. Just an absolutely ridiculous performance from Steph against the Orlando Magic on Thursday night. But back to the regional teams of interest, we'll start with the New York Knicks, who continue to just puzzle me, and I feel like they puzzle their fans too. They'll have some very good stretches. They had a stretch earlier in the month where they had a pretty solid win streak going. They had won 3 games in a row after getting their, socks knocked off by the Celtics. But I don't know. I don't know what to say about this Knicks team. Look, they're good. We know that they're good. I mean, they're 3rd in the East. They have the 4th best record in the NBA right now. But they just, they can't seem to beat the really good teams. You know, they beat up on the bad teams, but then the second they see a Cleveland or a Boston or an Oklahoma City Thunder, they always seem to shrink against that next level of competition. And you can't have that in the playoffs, especially when if you want a trip to the NBA Finals, barring some unforeseen upsets or some crazy movement in the standings, you're going to have to beat first Detroit. And granted, that can change right now. If the season ended today, they'd be facing Detroit. But Detroit's a very good team. They're young. They're scrappy. They don't have the experience, I don't think, to beat a team like the New York Knicks. But it's certainly an upset possibility against a young, hungry Detroit Pistons team who is kind of riding this momentum of, hey, this is our first good season in 20 years. Let's see what we can do. I mean, let's go out there and win a series and make our fans happy. Let's show the fans that we're not this scrub team anymore. And it's certainly a dangerous series to be in because it's kind of like a trap. The Knicks know if they're in a series with the Detroit Pistons that they should win. They really shouldn't struggle that much to beat that team. But Detroit is one of those teams with really nothing to lose. They don't have championship aspirations. They don't have expectations. They're just out there to hoop and to hopefully win games. And when you face a team like that in the playoffs, it can be very dangerous. So for the Knicks, yes, I see them beating the Detroit Pistons if that's who they end up drawing in the first round. But the other teams that surround the Pistons aren't that bad either. The Orlando Magic are about 5 games back, but they're still a solid squad with Paolo and Franz Wagner when he comes back and Cole Anthony, of course. They're certainly a team that, especially at the beginning of the season, they were looking very good. So they're another team that, again, the Knicks probably should be able to beat if they find them in a playoff series. But in a 7-game series, yeah, I like the Knicks, but I could see Paolo and the Magic stealing a couple. And once you steal a couple, anything can happen around the NBA. I mean, you win 2 games in a row and all of a sudden the series feels like it's almost over. Then there's Milwaukee in the 5th spot. They're only 0.5 game up from Detroit. So there's still some movement that could happen. And if the Knicks end up facing off against Giannis and Damian Lillard in the first round, I don't know if the Knicks can win that. I think the Knicks should. But am I going to sit here? I think that series goes at least 6 games if it's Knicks and Bucks. That's just what I'm expecting because Giannis and Dame come playoff time, they'll have a whole season of figuring out these kinks. I understand the Milwaukee Bucks did not start off the season very hot, but you have a long time to work through things in the NBA in a long 82-game regular season. So it's certainly a possibility that the Bucks could come in and upset New York. And if somehow the Indiana Pacers fell enough to be the 6th seed, we saw what happened against them last year in the playoffs. Could you get revenge for having some tough injuries and end up losing the series based on some unfortunate timed injuries? Yes, you could get that revenge, but I don't know, a lot of tough matchups for the New York Knicks. And then say you win that first round series, now you have to go and face the Boston Celtics in round 2. Are you really going to beat the Boston Celtics in a 7-game series? Maybe if Boston has a crazy championship hangover, but I don't necessarily see that happening. And then, all right, let's say, all right, you do somehow beat the Boston Celtics. You're riding high. You get the biggest upset out of any team in the playoffs so far. Now you have to face the Cleveland Cavaliers, who have been dominating all season long, have wicked impressive guard play in Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell, have 2 absolute units down low and Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. I don't see the Knicks winning that series either. So right now, if you were to ask me if the season ended today, I have the Knicks right now as hopefully beating the Pistons, but a Pistons upset certainly is possible. Most likely not beating the Boston Celtics. And if you can get past both those teams, then you end up with the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are probably going to give you the same result the Celtics would. They're probably going to beat you. So for the Knicks right now, it's just a very puzzling experience because I'm not a Knicks fan or anything. I'm not a Knicks hater either, but if I were a Knicks fan, I wouldn't know how to feel because you're finally back to being a good competitive team. You know, you're back to being a team that people actually talk about as having a chance to win the NBA Finals, and not, you're not the laughing stock of the league anymore. But on the other hand, you know, are you really going to defeat some of this top talent in the playoffs? Right now, it doesn't seem like the case. You haven't been able to beat a top three team all year long. But in the playoffs, anything can happen. You know, that's what makes it so tough to predict, is that literally anything can happen in the playoffs. You know, any number of guys can get injured. Any number of guys can go on absolute heaters and carry you for a round or two. You never know what's going to come in the playoffs. But right now for the Knicks, I guess if I were a Knicks fan, just enjoy the fact that your team is good. You know, you can still enjoy the fact that your team is third overall in the East, fourth in the entire NBA, and just be happy about that. You can be happy about the fact that your team is no longer a laughing stock, but you also have to have that realism that, look, your team is probably not going to beat the Boston Celtics. They're probably not going to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers or the Oklahoma City Thunder, or even maybe the Memphis Grizzlies, Denver Nuggets. There's a lot of teams out there in the league that will probably beat you in a 7-game series. So get the championship or bust mentality out of the way. I know that the Knicks made all these moves in acquiring Kat and Mikal Bridges and OG last season, all in an effort to put a championship caliber team around Jalen Brunson. But right now, I just don't see the depth. I don't see the coaching. I don't see a way in which the Knicks win the NBA Finals unless something unforeseen happens. And look, I'm not saying it's impossible, because like I said, anything can happen. But the Knicks right now just don't strike me as a team that I can be confident in saying that, yeah, they have a chance to win the Finals. I don't think they have enough to win the Finals. I think they have one of the best 5-man starting lineups in the NBA. But when you have no depth underneath, look, I don't care how bought in these players are to playing 40-plus minutes a game, but it's not going to work. I don't care what Tibbs says. I don't care how much the players want to do it. It's not going to work. Eventually, a wheel is going to fall off. And once one wheel falls off, when you're going 90 miles an hour, everything's going to fall apart at that point. And the Knicks did impress me with how they played in the absence of OG Anunoby. But can they do that in the playoffs in a 7-game series if he goes back down? God forbid they lose Kat. You know, he's an injury risk at any given time. And when he's not on the court, you can tell. You can very clearly tell the difference in this Knicks team when Karl Anthony Towns is playing versus when he's not. What if you somehow lose Jalen Brunson? Look, there's a lot of depth issues with this New York Knicks team, and if they don't address that in the offseason, they're going to risk having to blow up this core without being able to have anything to show for it. So if I'm the Knicks, look, if I'm Tibbs, especially in these games that don't matter as much because it's a regular season game in March, you know, especially if you're playing against a team that you should be able to beat, like when the Knicks play the Portland Trailblazers on March 12th, I better see some Tyler Kolek minutes. I better see some DeLon Wright minutes, because these are guys that, okay, are you going to put them out in the starting five in the NBA Finals? No. But they can give you solid minutes off the bench and take some sort of responsibility off your starters' backs. Take something to give the starters a break and give them a chance to just sit down and recover. Because at some point down the line, something's going to happen. Someone's going to get a bad cramp that turns into a strain. Someone's going to get injured. And I hate to sound like a Debbie Downer, but we've got to get these unrealistic expectations for the Knicks out of our heads. Because look, they don't have enough to win an NBA championship. They just don't. But they're in a better spot now than they were 2 years ago. And I think that's something that everyone needs to remember. That look, yes, I don't think the Knicks have enough to win it this year, but this wasn't even a conversation 2 years ago of do the Knicks have enough to win it. The conversation 2 years ago was, how can the Knicks get out of mediocrity and become a winning basketball team again? All right, well, they're a winning basketball team again. They're well over 500. They have a solid roster, but the depth, they have a solid starting five, I should say, but the depth is just not there. And until Tibbs realizes that he can't just run five men into the ground, because by the time you get through this long season, get to the playoffs, the season gets even longer because now you have seven game series everywhere you look. It's just not going to work out the way that Tibbs is running this team. And I think Tibbs is a good coach, but his system as far as running these guys 40 plus minutes a night, I don't agree with it. I see Tibbs getting outcoached by some of these better coaches on the better teams in the league. I just don't see how the Knicks find a way to get a championship this year. I don't. But hopefully they can go into the offseason, fine-tune some things, get some depth, get some real help, and we'll see. Because, you know, right now they just don't have the depth. Even with Mitchell Robinson coming back. If you think Mitchell Robinson coming back is going to be your championship-saving grace, then no, it's not. Mitchell Robinson is not going to come in and all of a sudden make you guys able to beat the Celtics or the Cavs or the Thunder or any of these other top teams. Yeah, it gives you an opportunity to, say, slide Josh Hart to the bench and slide Cat to the four. You could throw Mitch in as the backup center. However you want to spin this, it does help a little bit with the depth problem. But do I think that Mitchell Robinson will come back and play every game and not get injured again? No, I don't. I fully see him getting another injury at some point, which is unfortunate to say. I would never root for something like that, but I'm being realistic here. He's most likely not going to play the whole rest of the season once he comes back, especially the whole playoffs. So if you're banking on him coming back to get you to the finals, odds are it's not going to happen. But a team that certainly I think could make the finals, that being the Boston Celtics. There's really nothing I can say about the Celtics. We know exactly what to expect from them. We know they're going to be one of the best teams. Tatum, Brown, White, you know, they continue to, you know, gel on the basketball court. They continue to get better every single night. And look, yes, the Celtics have had some concerning losses. You know, you lose to the Pistons by 20. I wouldn't call that as much a concerning loss for the Celtics as I would an impressive win for the Pistons. The loss against the Mavericks early on in February was certainly interesting, especially the Mavericks without Luka while he's injured. You know, you still can't find a way to beat this team. I mean, you gave up 20 off the bench to Dinwiddie and Najee Marshall. Certainly could be a better performance from the Celtics than that one, but I wouldn't overreact. I'm not even close to hitting the panic button on the Boston Celtics just yet, because over this next month and a half of the regular season, they're going to continue winning. They're going to stick right around top two seed in the East. And in the Eastern Conference, there's really nobody I could see competing with them besides Cleveland. I mean, and even then, I still think Boston, despite the fact that Cleveland's had a chokehold on the number one seed all year long, I still see the Boston Celtics winning the East and eventually winning the championship. I don't know if I see Oklahoma City beating them either. You know, Oklahoma City's great, but I still don't know if they have that playoff experience. And they've been getting more and more every year. So at some point, you know, the question is not if this Thunder core can win a championship. It's when they're going to win a championship together. But right now, I still can't say for certain that they have the experience. The Celtics team, who quite literally just won an NBA championship, they know what it takes. They've been to plenty of championships in the Tatum and Brown era to know what to expect. They've been in plenty of tight playoff races. You know, they're built for this. They're ready for this. They know exactly what's going to happen. Cleveland and even OKC, both those teams, they continue to get better. They continue to get more experience. But I don't know. I got to see them actually take down a team like the Celtics before I can say, oh, okay, they're ready. Or I got to see the Thunder take down a team like the Nuggets or I guess the Lakers maybe. But either way, OKC, they're on paper the best team in the NBA, but can they stack up against these guys who have been here before, have seen the big moments? I don't know. I'd still, if I were picking today, I'd still go with the Boston Celtics as my NBA champion, but we will see. we will see lots of exciting stuff coming out of the NBA. Lots of exciting stuff coming out of the NCAA as well. March Madness, just 2 weeks until Selection Sunday. Cannot wait. It's the best time of year. March Madness, always a great time. The round of 64 is one of the best days of the year across the board. I mean, you have basketball from the minute you wake up till the minute you go to bed, and it's all just such exhilarating stuff. I'm beyond excited for this year's March Madness tournament, so cannot wait for that. When we come back, we will be joined by John Bam Bam Mueller, UAlbany's baseball head coach, to talk all things Great Danes and how they have begun their season on the road at Lamar University. Stay tuned. More of the Hot Seat coming up next here on 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio, and the free 104.5 The Team app. Vinny Fredericks from the Hot Seat here. And if you want to be up to date with when episodes are going to come out, when it's going to be live on air on 104.5 The Team, and if you want to see clippings and snippets of interviews and other on-air moments from my time here with 104.5 The Team, follow my social media accounts at VFreds Media, at VFREDDS Media on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and more to stay up to date on everything and all things Hot Seat and more. And we are back here on the Hot Seat here on 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio, that free 104.5 The Team app. As always, back after a busy week last week as the boys at UAlbany Baseball getting the season underway out in Beaumont, Texas at Lamar University. It is Coach Bam Bam John Mueller back in his weekly spot here at 11:45 on the Hot Seat. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course, appreciate you. I know things are busy this time of year, so appreciate you being able to work with me, make the time to still get these out there, as I know you boys have busy weekends coming up. We'll start with the series last weekend against Lamar. I mean, I know it's, you know, 0-3 is not the record you guys were hoping to start with, but you knew going in that Lamar was a very good baseball team, and your boys hung tough. I mean, only lost by a pair of runs in games 1 and 3. We won't talk about game 2 because, you know, things happen, but the two close games, you boys were right there from the get-go. So tell me, what's your thoughts on the team and how you feel they played at Lamar this past weekend?
We went out there with the intention of trying to get some answers about our young baseball team and staff more, and figure out where we were at. And you played the number 24 ranked team in the country. We had a 4-0 lead after 6 innings. Mm-hmm. Dylan Bennett, dominant, and Ethan Ardacci, the Section 2 kid from Avril Park area, comes out and pitches a clean 7th. Ran into some trouble in the 8th. We missed the fly. We missed the pop up with the 9-hole hitter was up. The 8-hole hitter singled. 9-hole hitter popped up. We missed it, and it opened up the floodgates. Yeah. 7 straight hits, 7 runs, and unfortunately, we weren't able to close the deal on Friday. but a really good showing. We really faced a good arm in Lamar, and we came out Saturday, and unfortunately we struggled finding the strike zone. We had about 11 free passes, which led to 3 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Which happens to everybody in the country.
Yeah.
For the most part, unless you're a superpower, power 5 super heavyweight, you're not gonna be in an exclusive company and not have that happen to you. So we turned around on Sunday, and Sunday was kind of a day of reckoning. Are we going to show up and battle and fight, or are we going to roll over and let them pound us again? And
mm-hmm.
Ryan Pitts got us off to a good start with 4 innings of one run ball. And, we had some really good outings. Christian Mello came out of the bullpen. His first fastball registered 93. His lowest was 88. So he was 88 to 93 out of the pen for his first time. He walked a couple guys, but super explosive arm. I'm excited to see him next weekend when we head to Longwood. And obviously, continue to where we're at with the rest of the guys. Offensively, we're trying to figure out our identity. And mm-hmm. on the mound, each week we get more answers. Can we rely on this guy? Can we not rely on this guy? We had 4 freshmen go out there and pitch. So it was an exciting thing to watch these guys pitch. And obviously, Long will be another challenge. I think it's a step down in class. So the expectations will be different. Now we're saying, hey, we need to go split this series.
Yep.
On the road. No excuses. So, overall, happy. We missed a couple cutoffs. We missed a cutoff. We missed some fly balls, pop-ups. We knew that was going to happen. When you don't get to practice those specific things, those are usually the first things that happen. A routine fly ball or a pop-up at night that gets lost. We're just not able to replicate that in practice inside a gym or inside one of the places we practice at.
Yeah, naturally. You know, it's hard to get that same game feel when you're not in the actual environment to make, you know, recreate those plays and you know, have a way to practice them. But, I mean, obviously with those being the key points from last weekend series at Lamar, is there anything you guys have been able to come with to try to somewhat practice these scenarios just to make sure that, you know, you guys, of course, every team's going to make mistakes, but just so that going forward, you guys don't kind of continue to make the same mistakes over and over again?
Yeah, we were able to get up to the football stadium, Bob Ford Field, this week. Able to get a ton of fly balls. Catchers got some pop-ups. We did some cuts and relays, some first and thirds. We did all of our defensive sets outside for about an hour and a half. Excuse me, on Tuesday. So that was nice that we were able to do that. I mean, that's the big thing. And just repping out swings and our move around. You know, getting guys in with less than two outs, we struggled with that a little bit. And I think that as you go in the season, the pitchers are always ahead of the hitters early. The hitters catch up, and then the pitchers got to make another adjustment. So it's kind of you move, I move, just like that type deal. So
that's a beautiful thing about sports. You know, it's always one team makes one move, the other team always with a counterpunch. Looking ahead to this weekend, I mean, obviously, you know, we're just so, you know, everyone listening knows, we're recording this a couple days before the Longwood series starts. So right now, with Longwood coming up this weekend, obviously by the time this airs, this series will be over. But right now, your thoughts going in, obviously, you guys got doubleheader on Saturday. So is part of the game plan here just understanding that you guys have four games in only 3 days and with all the travel involved, is the main mindset here mainly just to kind of get out there and try to, you know, keep everybody as fresh as possible, make sure that the guys that are playing in multiple games are staying well hydrated and that everybody's going to be good to go when an opportunity arises for them?
Well, it's no question. I mean, the number one thing we talked about last week was getting out healthy. We went to Tennessee last year, and we came home from Tennessee with two of our best left-handed pitchers done for the year with injuries. So we've checked that box. We got that goal accomplished this weekend, and you know, this past weekend, and now we're heading towards a weekend where, you know, I think that we're going to have to try. We can actually try to outlast these guys. I don't. Mm-hmm. They have a new coach. The previous coach left, brought a bunch of guys with him to Coastal Carolina. A bunch of guys graduated. New guys, a really, really nice guy. He's brought in a ton of new guys, but I'm not sure if they're the type of guys that we've been faced last weekend. I think it's a different crop of guys, and I think it's a little bit lower. I think that they're going to really try to run. They're going to try to bunt. They're going to try to pressure our defense, and if we can play defense and, you know, have some quality of bats and string them together, I think we can put some runs up on the board. And obviously, Dylan's going to be a real problem Friday night for any team that we play. I mean, he's a top 25 type arm. He went out six innings against a team that's leading the country in runs scored, yep, and the most difficult team to strike out in the country, in Lamar, who's currently 9-1, and pretty much dominated them for 2 hours in six innings of a no run ball. So, you know, obviously leaning on him for another five or six quality innings, three runs or less. Mm-hmm. Can't expect him to be perfect. And then obviously the weather will affect the games on Saturday. There's wind gusts up to 25 miles an hour. Oof. They could be blowing out. They could be blowing in. They could be blowing sideways. We don't know.
Yep.
We do know that the weather's going to be nice. We didn't see the sun once in Texas. It was, upper 30s on Friday, misty, rainy, gloomy on Saturday, and then Sunday it was pretty much the same. So
yeah,
it was
not baseball weather whatsoever.
Well, not unless you're the UAlbany head baseball coach. That's right up your alley. That's like, you know, eggs and bacon in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. I hear you, Coach. Real quick, coming up on Tuesday, you guys, you know, no shortage of travel, going straight from Longwood to Central Connecticut to take on Central Connecticut University on Tuesday afternoon for a one-game series. What's the quick scouting report on them? I know you guys aren't looking past Longwood just yet, but with next Tuesday, the one-game series, what are your thoughts on having to travel all the way from Virginia back up to Connecticut for that Tuesday afternoon game?
Yeah, well, we'll come back late, early Monday morning. We'll be there about, I don't know, probably 3 or 4. We'll be going to bed when everybody's getting up. yeah. But we will, we'll take Monday off and we'll get on a bus Tuesday and head off to Central. Central's obviously, they're near the top of the Northeast Conference every year. it'll be their first game. They'll be full of vinegar. They'll be at home. You know, they'll be all their arms will pitch, which means we'll see 1, 2, 3, 4. They're all going to get out there and get a couple innings, so we won't see midweek arms, which is typically guys not at the top of the rotation. And we'll kind of see what we have left after, you know, 4 games in 3 days. You know, it ended up being essentially 5 games in 5 days. So yeah. We're going to be light. We're going to be light in that department for sure. They'll see some guys that won't pitch a lot just because we need to get those guys out there and evaluate them. And so I think we'll be up against it for sure. But certainly we'll be ready to compete. I mean, there's going to be guys out there on Tuesday that maybe don't normally get out there on conference weekend to kind of showcase their ability or get some work in. And obviously the record is what the record's going to be. But, you know, our job is to get prepared for that very difficult American East Conference. And if we're 3-14 or we're 14-3, it has absolutely no bearing on whether we're going to make the tournament and potentially get an NCAA regional bid. So we can't worry about the record. We got to worry about getting better and putting all the noise aside. And that's what we'll do every day and every weekend. And, you know, obviously the health is number one this early in the year. We still have a couple guys making their way back. So that's exciting. We got a third baseman that's not quite healthy. We got a really good power left-handed pitcher, power arm, who was hurt at Tennessee last year. He's making his way back. So, you know, those pieces are important to us. So, you know, next step, we're really excited about this trip. Weather's going to be great, and I look forward to sharing some insight on these fall 5 games next week.
Hey, well, we look forward to hearing the outcome, Coach, and getting to talk with you again next week. Once again, UAlbany baseball head coach John Bam Bam Mueller joining us for his weekly spotlight here on the Hot Seat 1145 every Sunday morning. Coach, safe travels. Best of luck to you guys this weekend and next week. And we'll figure out when we can do this again next week to get you on Sunday. All right, sound good?
Yeah, appreciate it, Vinny. Keep doing a great job. The listeners, listen up to him. He's doing a great job. Go Danes.
Thank you, Coach. Go Danes. And thank you again to John Bam Bam Mueller, UAlbany baseball head coach, for joining us here on the Hot Seat. We will be back at it next week with more for you, more baseball, more UAlbany baseball, more college and NBA basketball, some more NFL offseason news. As always, it's the Hot Seat, the home of the hottest takes, the hottest headlines, and the hottest topics around the world of sports and beyond, with Vinny Fredericks here for 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio in Albany, signing off. Have a good day, everybody. Vinny Fredericks here from the Hot Seat, just wanting to say thank you. Thank you for being a listener. Thank you for supporting the podcast. Or if you're listening live on 104.5 The Team every Sunday morning from 11 a.m. till 12 noon, we appreciate it very much here. And it's because of listeners like you that I continue to do this and follow my dreams. So thank you again for listening and for being a supporter of the Hot Seat and 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. Be on the lookout for new episodes throughout the week and for the live airings every Sunday morning on 104.5 The Team.